Blog Talk Radio.
The devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sewing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul, because I think I'm better than you." The boy said, "My name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet, and you're going to regret, because I'm the best as ever been. Johnny, rosin up your bow and play your fiddle hard, cause hell broke loose in Georgia and the devil deals the cards. And if you win, you get this shiny fiddle made of gold, but if you lose, the devil gets your soul." The devil opened up his case and he said, "I'll start this show," and fire flew from his fingertips as he rosined up his bow. And he pulled the bow across the strings, and it made an evil hiss. And then a band of demons joined in, and it sounded something like this. Johnny said, "Well, you're pretty good, old son, but sit down in that chair right there and let me show you how it's done. Fire on the mountain, run, boys, run. The devil's in the house of the rising sun. Chicken in the bread pan, picking out dough. Ready to dog fight, no child, no." Devil bowed his head because he knew that he'd been beat, and he laid that golden fiddle on the ground at Johnny's feet. Johnny said, "Devil, just come on back if you ever want to try again. I done told you once, you son of a bitch, I'm the best as ever been." He played, "Fire on the mountain, run, boys, run. Devil's in the house of the rising sun. The chicken in the bread pan, I'm picking out dough. Granny, we a dog fight, no child, no."
Welcome, everyone. You're listening to Imploding the Illusion. I'm your host, Raquel Okiai. I have a great show planned for us tonight, a lot of current events, a lot of things going on with presidential election 2020, a big fight, I think, going on between Democrats and Republicans on polar opposite sides of what should be happening in our country and whether our president is doing a good job or a bad job. Those are some of the topics that I'd like to discuss for the next hour. My special guest tonight is a returning guest. He's a retired U.S. Army intelligence analyst, William Figueroa. It's hard to say. It's like a tongue twister. Figueroa Jr., welcome to the show. I'm going to put you on live right now.
How you doing?
Perfect. I'm doing very well. Thank you. Thanks for spending the time with us tonight and give us your information. So you are a former Army intelligence analyst. So I want to go right into kind of the topic, sort of the main topic I have on my mind tonight, which is currently our DOJ is investigating the origins of that Russian collusion unverified dossier that sort of started the whole probe against Trump, who was, let's remember, a candidate at the time. It seems like to me that what's going to come forth in the next weeks and months maybe is that the Democrats who were in charge, had the presidency, the Obama presidency, were doing things that I don't know that it's ever happened before. I think that they were using federal resources, so they're using the Department of Justice to spy, and you can disagree with me on that if you want to spy on opposing campaigns. I think it's unprecedented, and I think that's not what the American people expect. I think it's maybe worse than Watergate. They had Watergate test the main spy, I guess, kind of the main guy, criminal, testifying in Congress. Maybe you heard about it. I watched the whole thing last week. There's a lot of crazy things going on. So we have this whole group of Democrats going crazy. They have there's such this anti-Trump bias. Every single word that he utters is super analyzed and criticized. And on the other side, we have a lot of, patriotic, America-loving people who want the things that Trump campaigned on. A lot of us voted for Trump because we want him to get done, or we want him to complete the campaign promises that he did, including the wall and other things. And we believe, the economy is doing very well. I think a lot of good things going on in America. Lowest unemployment rates in our history, particularly in minority communities. We have more people off food stamps. That's because they have jobs. They're working on, a lot of good things going on, and you probably agree with me. So let me know your opinion. I know I just talked about like 10 different things.
That's fine.
So let's start with the I'm sorry for rambling. I've been following this like very closely all week long. I've been glued to the TV, and I usually don't do that. And the news and print media and just following up on this whole investigation. So from your perspective, I want to know what you think is going on with the DOJ investigating the origins of that Russian collusion story.
I found that C-SPAN certainly became my friend over the last couple of years. A lot of good stuff that's being put out there in kind of a raw format, which I think does justice for we the people, nothing processed, because it's the process stuff that's actually a large part of this problem. The propaganda, the way things are put together in a narrative, and it's true for both sides. It's very, very apparent on the left, as you were saying. It seems like, and it's true, that on the left, there's a lot of howling. It's getting louder. And for someone like me, for an analyst to see that, you start realizing there are nerves being struck. And so you have two narratives in the most simplest form. One that the left wants to believe, which is that they're uber patriotic. They're doing it for the country and for we the people. And, they're going to get to the bottom of this, whatever this is. And the other side, which is, I believe there are nerves being struck. And people are starting to howl out in pain because it's getting dangerously close for key people, key organizations. A whole lot of apple carts are going to be getting turned over here. And gravy trains that people have had and developed over decades are about to come to a screeching halt. And so that's what I'm seeing. So as you were saying, the DOJ is getting very busy. And there's one reason why. It's President Trump and those around him realized that they were being spied on. And you know when someone has information about you that you did not give them, but they seem to know, that information is getting out there to them.
Right.
This is on a national level. So they knew. And once they got in and they had the levers of power, they technically had access to everything that was done in the prior administrations, plural. And
I noticed that too. And I don't, I think that they thought Hillary was going to win. So they didn't, they weren't afraid that anything would be unclassified. And the president has the power to do that.
Yes, he does. He has absolute power to declassify. Classified information is the sole domain of the executive branch and belongs to the president. That's the reason why Congress has to ask for classified information, because it doesn't belong to him. I can go through a whole spiel about how classified information works, how classification, declassification works, and all that kind of stuff. But the bottom line is there are two things you need to know. One, all classified information belongs to the president ultimately. And two, given enough time, the president can literally know everything there is to know that we hold as far as information, period. It all belongs to him, and, you know, it's just a matter of how fast he can consume information. And that was the big fear. So if you remember, upon being elected, there's a three-month period prior to him actually taking the levers of power, and there were a lot of things getting pushed. There was the appeal to the Electoral College, you know, vote your conscience, you know, basically vote for Clinton. She ended up losing the Electoral College votes from faithless electors. You had, like, the Hollywood people coming out and, you know, you had the people screaming at the sky and just everything. Everybody complaining about the Electoral College, basically,
yes,
and the sky. So – and they knew they had 3 months to clean up as much as you can. You can't clean up 8, 10, 12 years, whatever it is, however far back this goes, in 3 months. You can't do it. So ultimately, given enough time, he will find it. So the first thing he went after.
And then don't forget, and then the Obama administration put sanctions on Russia for the for them coming to the conclusion that they, you know, there were 19 people. I read the first part of the Mueller report, and
yeah.
You know, eventually it was 19 individuals, including a few companies potentially.
Yep, three companies.
Two major ones. But they did put sanctions on Russia for that so-called interference. And I think what they'd like the American people to believe is that, you know, 19 people or entities placing a bunch of Facebook ads and social media ads, you know, having some sort of presence somewhere, is going to affect the American electorate. You know, like, they got to be kidding me.
It really is impossible.
If 19 people could actually affect an election in the way that they're proposing it has, you know, we're really in bad trouble, because look, we have the media. You know, okay, they're not foreign nationals, that's fine, but we do have a media seemingly orchestrating with the Democrat Party. You know, that they're giving direct leaks to the Democrat Party are giving direct leaks to the media, which they're not supposed to do,
no.
But they're doing it anyway. I hope they're held accountable for that.
Well, that's to be seen.
Look, yes, I guess we will have to see that. And I think it is coming forward. But I don't think they expect it. So he Obama issues these sanctions like December 31st.
Right.
When you know what I mean? He's leaving office. You know, isn't that – don't people are like, isn't that a little sneaky? Like, why? And then Trump, you know, Trump or somebody in Trump's staff, you know, they – you know, what I read in the first part of the Mueller report, in fact, Russia was trying really hard to kind of get in touch with Trump. They wanted him to come visit. They wanted him to come speak at economic policy things. They wanted him to come meet with, you know, business leaders. They wanted him to come and talk about, you know, earlier, previous to the election, a lot of talk about him building the Trump. It wasn't him directly. It was really Cohen and his son. But about building the Trump Moscow. And all of it, you know, just seems like, you know, business deals, you know, whatever it is that Trump does, there was nothing, anything like fishy about it. At least not, I haven't seen anything fishy about it in the first part, but nonetheless, you know, Obama put sanctions against Russia, you know, order some countries out, some people out. They still have unidentified, you know, all of the defendants in the load and dope, like unloading the emails, Hillary Clinton email scandal, which the Justice Department under Obama said it was Russia who did it, which is possible. But even if it was Russia, Will, my point is that not, you know, 19 Russian collaborators cannot affect an American election. you know, we'd have to be like really dopey, you know. I mean, we've got all those we have all that the liberal media, or you know, bashing Trump and putting up Hillary in the fake polls like they're doing this week with Biden on the fake polls. I mean, I don't know. It's just gotten crazy.
Well, so,
but nobody called out Obama for sanctions against Russia. For what?
I'll tell you why. And if you think about it, it makes sense. So you have an election, and the election didn't go the way they wanted it to. And we know that intrinsically, but they didn't come out and say it. And there's nothing wrong with that. If you're on the losing side, you don't want to lose. That's fine. But the thing that started to bubble up was this notion that there was this tremendous interference. And if you recall from back then, no one knew the extent of the interference. It was just, you know, this nebulous Russia interfered. Russia's a big country. Yeah? It's 11 time zones. So you can kind of automatically get the sense that, wow, but, you know, this thing might be huge, what they did. It turns out it wasn't, because it's not – it really isn't possible.
I don't think it is
either. What they were doing. Yeah, it's not. But what is possible is that if you start with a story, you put forth a story, and as you said, you got mouthpieces in the media that speak directly for one side and against the other, and you put out that, hey, you know, Russia really was involved in this, and we believe that they helped Trump win, which, by the way, not a crime, right? If Trump wins as a consequence of Russian interference, and he had nothing to do with it, not a crime.
Yeah, exactly.
Unfortunate. We don't want it to happen. We don't want Russians involved. And by the way, they've been involved since the beginning. And they're not the only nation. We're constantly interfered with. And I'm sure, as we found out with Obama, we interfere with other countries in elections too. That's the way of international politics. However, it's not a crime. So you put the sanctions on them, and it makes it look like, you know, hey, so we did something. You know, it sucks. The election went this way. We have all the screamers. You know, we didn't want Trump, and Trump won, and we're going to blame Russia. We sanctioned them. But what that really ended up being was one of numerous landmines that the Obama administration left behind, political landmines that Trump would have to deal with. Because in the end, Obama and his team leaves, and there's still sanctions on Russia. And now you have, Trump, who's being accused of being colluding with Russia. What does he do? Does he remove those sanctions? Makes it look bad, right? It looks bad. Why are you removing the sanctions? They interfered in this election. Did they actually help you? What if he finds out that this was in fact a landmine and it's unjust and it's actually going to harm relations between Russia and us, and he's got to deal with that landmine? So it was a very tricky situation. And that was an easy one for Obama to put out, and there were hundreds of them. And we're starting to learn about these every day now. So he's constantly attacked.
But do you think that they were actually spying, as Trump has said, called it spying, A.G. Barr has called it spying?
Yes.
Is it that the Democrats are spying on Trump, the campaign? Now, do you think that they can – the Justice Department is going to hold them accountable? People are going to get indicted? People are going to go to trial on these matters?
I do, and I'll tell you why. And I've heard many opinions that go in either direction, where some say, you know, it's going to be the same old, same old. No one's going to get indicted. If it goes that way, if it's business as usual, it's going to end up adding yet another, or removing yet another Jenga piece from this really teetering political situation we have, until finally it does go over. Because people understand that Hillary Clinton got away with a whole lot when it came to the email server, and we're understanding, you know, that things weren't quite up to snuff when it came to the Uranium One deal. And people understood that running guns into Mexico with Fast and Furious was a bad thing, but yet nothing happens. That's your status quo, right? If you're connected, nothing happens to you. If you're an underling and they need a sacrificial lamb, you're going to go down and as a token to the country, like, see, we did something. I don't think that's going to happen. I think Barr understands this. I think Barr understands, and he's even expressed it, that should it go in this way, the American people have really no reason to ever have faith in an entity like the FBI or the Department of Justice, and that would create chaos inside of our own government. We'd have no choice but to dissolve it and start it over again as far as those agencies, which we've done before. I like to remind people that the Pentagon and the Department of Defense was not called the Department of Defense in the beginning. It was the War Department for George Washington and a few other presidents. And then they realized, you know, that kind of sounds like we're gunning for war. We should try and change the name. So we've done it before. We've re-sculpted executive branch agencies. I think what's going to happen, and there's a second theory, and it's probably what I think most people will consider the most probable, which is that you're going to have a whole lot of sacrificial lambs. There'll be a number of them. They're all going to get frog marched and tried and, you know, basically the show trial thing. And hopefully that'll sate the appetites for justice from the American people. And yet still your bigwigs get away. I disagree with that theory. I think that will not satisfy the majority of people looking for justice. We want the big names, and we know
what
who they are.
What about the media? What about the media is so biased right now, it's really hard to get anything out of them that sounds valid.
Right, and there's a reason for that.
Yeah, he had an interview with George Papadopoulos this week.
Papadopoulos, yes, Papadopoulos.
I saw it too. I think he answered the question honestly. I think the guy, you know, Trump is really honest guy. He just, you know, he shoots from his mouth and he just answers the question. And the question was, it was a hypothesis. So if a foreign country had the dirt, the goods on your opposition candidate, what do you do? Do you contact the FBI? Do you want the information? He's like, yeah, I'll take a look at it. Maybe I'll call. Maybe I'll, if it's criminal or something, you know, maybe I'll call the FBI. And he's like, in my whole lifetime, I've never called the FBI.
Yeah, no one called. He was right about that. No one called the FBI. But what his actual answer was that I think you do both, which is the right answer.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, that's exactly it.
And that's,
so what's up with the media? How do you explain a media that goes out there that people aren't actually watching the interview, and they're just taking the sound bites and then listening to the pundits talk about it, and they make it sound like that actual answer, that's the proof of Russian collusion.
And so, like I said, as I alluded to before, there's a reason for that. And the reason we're going to find out, this is one of my predictions, and it's not very – I'm not going out on a limb on this one. I think this one's pretty easy. We're going to find out that a lot of the media are actually a part of this deep state criminal deep state entity that he's going after. It's not going to just be politicians who are doing the wrong thing, breaking laws. We're going to find out that there were members of the media who are also actively involved in that. And if you think about it, I mentioned the gravy train before. You have a practically incestuous relationship between the media and the left where once they leave office, to remain relevant, they go into the media and become – you know, experts. They're SMEs, right? They're the subject matter experts. And it keeps them in the public eye, keeps them, you know, anchored into D.C., even though they're out of power, whatever it is. And when you start mixing the media and political entities, people, you really become, over time, a homogenous group, right? I mean, the laws of averages basically tells you that. If you keep adding politicians to your media team, eventually you're going to just become a political entity. And I think that's why.
Is there a line drawn for the media? I mean, is it dangerous for them? When does that speech, that free speech, become dangerous and hostile? Where they can be held liable as part of the deep state. When does that? Under what circumstances can that happen?
First thing that comes to mind is when they break the law. So if you're accepting leaked information, yeah, I get it, it's a scoop, but it's still against the law. That would be one part of that equation. I think the other part of it is when they're not really actually paying attention to what's going on, the truth. You know, they're not reporting anymore. They're not reporters. They don't journal. They're not journalists. They don't report. They're not reporters. they are mouthpieces. They've transformed into a propaganda entity. And so I think that's your line, right? Once you move away from the truth, bad news is bad news, right? Sports, I always go to sports because sports is pretty true. You don't go and watch your local sports newscaster and have him lie to you that your team won when they got blown out, right? That doesn't happen. He would get, like, laughed out of the – what do you mean we won? I was at the game. We got blown out 18-0. That doesn't happen in sports. Why? Because the proof is in the pudding. You see the truth there. Politics is a lot more nebulous. And so it turns – when you turn away from the truth and you start steering that information, which is what happened with the – it wasn't Papadopoulos. What, the guy who interviewed Trump, his name actually comes to me. But – he had a decent interview, and then the media spins it, pulling things out of context, saying, look, he said he would accept information from foreign powers. Well, President Trump's right. You know, if they call me and tell me something, he also said, I think you listen to it. There's no harm in that. Just listen to it. Yeah, hey, someone, blah, 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 this and that about your opponent. All right, thanks. Good to know. As long as you don't do anything for them about it, you don't pay them for it, you don't ask them to do more, there's no problem with that stuff. I'll give you an example. When I was in Africa, I won't name the country, we were training that country's military, 3 battalions worth, and during that time, one of their officers had delivered to us their country's classified documents, 4 of them specifically. When you're there as a guest, you're not supposed to collect information like that. However, as an intel analyst, I was authorized to do so. So I took it and read it and processed it properly and sent it up the chain of command. And I'm trying to see if I can tie this in the right way. The information that I sent was factual, but the way that it was interpreted by our guys tended to lean in a certain direction that was designed to satisfy certain people's objectives, and it kind of skewed what was going on with that information. I don't know if that makes sense. Does that make sense to you so far?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. And so here you have someone who spoke, the president. He says things candidly. It gets reported fairly candidly because, I mean, it's recorded, right? It's on video. And then it gets filtered through this entity so that they can make it sound like something that it's not. The bottom line for me was I ended up getting a talking to from the 4-star command because they wanted to know what was going on. And when they came to talk to me, I told them exactly what was going on, kind of like what Trump does, right? Just shoots from the hip, hey, this is what happened. They're like, oh, well, that's not what these guys told me. Well, that's what my report said. I have it still. And I had that opportunity to do that and clear the air. The president tries that with, you know, with Twitter and talking to us directly as best he can. But he's got a large, large enemy ahead of him. And he knows it. That's why he calls the media the enemy. And they are. They act like the enemy. You should treat them like the enemy until they become unbiased. Now, what's funny about lies, and you know this, you have kids, right? The funny thing about lies is that they're difficult to sustain over time. And even harder now that we have text and, you know, the internet with written word, we have video, we have audio all over the place. So we can pretty much debunk these things relatively quickly if people take the time. And the media banks on people not taking the time. So that goes back to your question. Why do they do this? Because they bank on people saying, look, I'm busy. I'll hear this blip here. Hey, that doesn't sound cool. I thought he said that he didn't collude with the Russians. He's saying he's going to collude with the Russians. You get it, right? You understand why they do that.
Yeah,
I think the danger for them is, and the reason why they're howling so much, is that the more that they have to sustain their lies, the more exposed those lies are to people who are now looking to see if they're telling the truth. People are actually checking to see what those interviews look like. C-SPAN's hitting record numbers every time they have, you know, the Kavanaugh thing was like their biggest video production like ever in their history. People are paying attention.
Wow.
Yeah. It's very dangerous.
They are, and they're
now
geared up, and they're watching the, you know, particularly people who voted for Trump. You know, we saw his message or whatever their reasoning was, what they saw in Trump. I think he's a populist more than anything else, and
yep.
I think he does relate to the working man, and that's what helped men and women, and that's what helped him, I think. And you, I don't know. I watch his speeches and his campaign speeches. You know, to date, and they're really fiery and exciting and funny, and people are having a good time. They really like the president. They're cheering for him. So I think when they go home and they put the television on and they hear all this, he's a liar. You know, they just nonstop. They just can't get over themselves. I think it pisses them off because they're like, hey, you know, what are you talking about? You know, like. They changed the channel. And now, because we have the alternate media, different media, like you said, instant media, that we all can get – I think things would be really tough if we didn't have that. I think the media had a lot more control, you know, even 20, 30 years ago had a lot more control than they do now, which they don't, which is good. But I have to say this. I am still fearful that they will be able to communicate that message in the wrong way. So they can take an actual, you know, as you were describing that happened to you, you can take an actual video, watch the same thing, yet the media, like kind of in concert, you know, the CNN, the MSNBC, the ABC, the CBS, you know, like in concert, saying the same lie. I know it's hard to keep up a lie. You're absolutely right. It's hard to have a conspiracy because everybody has to keep up with the same lie, and that's very difficult.
Yes.
But what happens when, you know, sometimes I think that repetitiveness and just that constant, they are colluding against Trump. I think it starts to, like, get into people's minds, and they want to join the bandwagon against Trump. And I worry about that. Do you?
I don't. From the conversations I have with my group of people that I converse with, about 5,000 people, I'm not seeing a lot of people converting in one way or the other. There is – you got the walkaway people. I've talked to a few of them. And I think they're one of the most interesting stories because these are people who are used to being downtrodden because the media tells them that they're downtrodden. That's your, you know, gays, blacks, Hispanics, where they're being told, hey, your life's not good. And I remember having that kind of a conversation, like, my life's okay. No, you're being oppressed. You know, these guys are doing this to you and they're doing that to you. And because of this age of media, I think they're researching and going, you know what, this can't be true. You have the first step that President Trump just pushed through, and with the help of Kim Kardashian carries a lot of weight with your youth, right? They all know who she is. I haven't heard one negative thing about Kim Kardashian. People are holding their mouth. Why is she working with Trump? Is about the worst you hear. And then you hear what they did. And then you have people's testimony saying, hey, you know, I was this drunk driver and I accidentally, you know, got to an accident, which is the story I heard, right? I could have killed that guy, blah, blah. I went to jail. I served my time. And then I came out. And now this first step gives him the opportunity to regain his life again, which is terribly difficult, right?
Yeah.
People are starting to pay attention. People are starting to catch on to the fact that, what do you mean the president doesn't take a paycheck? He doesn't. He's not the only one either. He's got plenty of cabinet members who are also billionaires, and they don't take a paycheck. And you're like, what, really? Like, yeah. He's also turned in – I found this out, I think, 2 days ago because I keep getting the arguments about emoluments and the fact that people are paying his properties to stay there because he's the president, which is fine. He's turned over to the Treasury so far like $353,000. He doesn't explain why, but he explains where it comes from, Trump Enterprises. But he did also say, I'm not going to take extra money from guests from foreign countries. I'm going to make sure that goes to the Treasury. So he's given up that much, too. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is. It is. And unfortunately, that's not covered. And with the First Step Act, as you said, it actually is ironic because it was Joe Biden who was one of the, I think, lead sponsors on this 1994 crime bill, which was, you know, which was very harsh. And in part, this law, you know, was a means to kind of overturn some of the harsh measures, which led to sort of, you know, some say mass incarceration of minorities. So that's something, you know, important to the minority community. Okay, so obviously they don't want mass, you know, incarceration of their community, dads, brothers, sons. You know, nobody wants that. It's not good for anybody. And if there's a means to – it's very difficult. People come out of jail, convicted felons. You can't get a job. You can't get an apartment. You can't get a loan. You can't get – I mean, you're sort of like they're almost led right back into the – you know, high recidivism rates, led right back into prison. So you know, what the president did with moving to push this bill is absolutely remarkable, because it does such a good service, because this part of the thing that the program does is that the federal government gives extra funding to companies that hire, you know, persons coming out of prison. You know, I'm talking about the convicted felons. You know, that application, that part, are you a convicted felon? That means something, and it hurts you. It hurts you in the future. So you paid your time, you're out of jail. Let them work. They want to work. You know, and they talked about that. I watched that press conference as well. And it was really fascinating. And the American people really have to see this. And I think they're really heartwarmed by Trump, you know, working to get that done. And you know, Biden, all right, I have to ask your opinion about these. I call them fake polls, like the president. I love when he calls them fake news. So I suppose there was a poll that came out that said Biden was in the lead if there was the election held today. Yeah, Biden by 10 points.
10, 11 points. I think it was in Texas. Now, I took there were two takeaways for me on that. So here is Biden plus 11 in Texas, a red state, at least in the current standard. So my first takeaway was, yeah, it could be a fake poll. It can be. And I've always said, even when I was a young man, the only poll that matters is election day. So I really never gave him a lot of weight. But you can kind of get a feel for where at least the reporting entity comes from, what they're seeing. But the second thing is that Texas is a big crown jewel that the left wants, because it is the largest electoral vote red state right now. You know, whereas California is 55 for the left currently, Texas is second. I forget how many they have. So that kind of gives you like a little red flag, like, you know, can't dismiss it outright. You don't want to act like it's in the bag. You definitely want to attend to that. Cruz did not demolish Beto. He won, but he did not demolish Beto in the 2018 election. So it is something you need to keep your eye on, because you lose Texas, you're not winning elections again until you get one of those two states back. Which is why I think Rush Limbaugh said that Trump should go to California. And he should. He should absolutely go to California. Because I know a lot of Republicans who somehow still live in California because they just don't want to leave. And they're suffering. They're suffering. You know, so if this man
Try to look back to Ronald Reagan. So he won in a landslide in his second term, and he won California, and you know, it was a big win for him. Of course, he was the former governor of California, so it made a big difference, I think, for him. Whether Trump can, you know, I think he could do it in a landslide, but taking California would be a huge win for the Republican Party, that's for sure. And it would actually be a huge win for the people, because it would we'd be basically telling the media, like, you know, we don't really believe your lies, obviously.
Anymore.
Your lies.
Yes. Yes.
And they're also going, you know, it's not like they're getting higher views from it. Isn't this like CNN? They're dropping. I always hear that on Fox News. The CNN
yeah.
ratings are going down.
They're hemorrhaging in every category. Yeah, as far
mm-hmm.
as I can tell. And that's got to be horrible for them, you know, because you're trying to sell a story. Acosta just had his book come out, and he tweeted like images of him at a DC or Virginia bookstore, and there was nobody around him. It was just him and a pile of books. You know, and he got lambasted for it. Whereas I think Trump has a rally coming up in the South somewhere. I'm not sure which state. And it's only a 20,000 capacity. They have like 55,000 requests. I mean, and that seems to be the norm for him. You know, you have to put screens out outside, and people are willing to stand in whatever weather just to hear him. It is kind of amazing. I think Trump goes to California and doesn't go there with the idea that I'm going to win California. But if you go to California and you start making Democrats shaking their boots because of what he's done, they're going to actually have to focus on California just to maintain. That's what I think. It's your biggest piece. If it's your biggest piece on the board, you're going to have to protect it. You let the president go there. He should go there like 10, 15 times. Hit every major city and have these conversations, see where it goes, because that'll start forcing the Democrats to retract from whatever states they're trying to flip, including Texas. But I made
I guess you're right about that, right? That's a good strategy.
Yeah, I made a crazy prediction, and I probably was drinking too much beer one night, and I told people that I think he's going to win 40 states. And 40 states is pretty aggressive. There are easily 13 states that are considered like reliable blue. I suspect, being from New York and hearing people up here really upset about having a completely Democrat-controlled New York, I wouldn't be too surprised if he actually took New York, and New York has a lot of electoral votes. Could be enough to really make more record-breaking, electoral standards for him. We don't know. New York was red not too long ago, really. It really wasn't. Like you said,
Republican governor.
Yeah,
two terms.
Reagan won New York.
A backlash from the really far left politics that's going on in New York State. So we are going to see that. I think New York. I think he should campaign in New York. Absolutely. Also, you know, he is a New Yorker. He does have people that followed him in his career and enjoyed him. You know, as an entertainer and also as a businessman and Atlantic City and everything that Trump Towers, everything that he's done, developer, a Starrett City in Brooklyn he built, which is for low income families. And it's just really tremendous. People like him. New Yorkers like him. Whether they're, I see actually from my old neighborhood friends in Queens, some of my friends, we're both from New York, a very liberal city. And a lot of my friends that wasn't really following politics as much as I would on the conservative side, and probably would have a lot more friends who were registered Democrats. But when Trump got elected, when during the campaign against Clinton, a lot of my old friends were reaching out to me, telling me how much they love Trump and, keep up the good work and, this is great. Very excited about Trump's campaign. Now, the other thing I want to let you all know is when you look at the electorate in New York State, you have, at least registered voters, you have upstate, the upper part of New York, outside of New York City, having an equal amount of Republicans. In other words, the amount of Republicans to Democrats is like 7-1 in some parts, sometimes worse, like 14-1 in some parts of the city. Upstate New York, we have more Republicans. So if the upper part of the state got out the vote, they got out the vote, and that's what Pataki did successfully. You have to get out the vote in the northern part of the state. Trump does that. And these aren't city liberals, okay? These are gun owners. These are New York Rifle and Pistol Association, very oldest civil rights organization in the country. They very popular group, of course, conservative, you know, Second Amendment rights advocates. It's very powerful. They're very powerful in New York. I think Trump, you're right. I think that these states that weren't, may have not been possible before, and certainly wouldn't be possible like other, like I want to say second rate candidates like Mitt Romney or,
yep,
or McCain. If anybody can do it, Trump can do it.
I agree. He's changed the format effectively of everything. When I was in the military, because we are part of the executive branch, you still have that kind of same mindset, even though we're disciplined. But you do start seeing a lot of this as it goes up in rank. You have groupthink. You know, you start to lose your identity. Next thing you know, you're being run by that entity. And then this commander comes in, and we have commanders at every level, from company all the way up to the president. New commander comes in, and he's like, so what do you guys do for such and such a thing? And they explain to him this is how we do it. He's like, yeah, no, we're not doing that. We're going to do it this way. And it shakes up an entire element. And those people resist. We call it an extinction event, right? People don't like change. People start dragging their feet. People start hemming and hawing. But ultimately, given time, the commander will have his way. If he's making a good decision, it'll stick. If he's making a fool's decision, it'll fail, as it should, and so on. He's doing this at the very top level. I mean, he has 1,800 people who work in just the executive office of the president. Just immediately around him. I was doing this research, preparing for this thing. 1,800 people. Now, he's used to having a lot of people. I'm not saying that. But he's got, like, 10 different organizations that are just part of his executive office in the White House. And then you have CIA, FBI, DIA, you know, NSA, the Office of the Interior, all that kind of stuff. And he's got to deal with all those entities, and each of those have thousands of people. It's really daunting, which is why it said, you know, given time, the president can know anything. He can know everything. 8 years is not enough time. That's a fact. There's just not enough time to get everything. So he's got to pick and choose. But he's definitely changed the way people look at politics. And he comes at it, like as you said before, he comes at it in a very honest, truthful, sometimes raw manner that kind of hits the everyman, where he gives an answer where you say to yourself, yeah, I would do that too. I mean, why do we do this? When he went to Europe, to NATO, complain about the fact that we pay for basically everything, they pay for nothing, they exist in their somewhat socialist utopia under our dollar, and maybe you guys should, you know, pay some more. And everybody went, oh my God, that's so rude. You can't be doing that to our allies. And yet your regular guy's like, wait, we pay how much? 90-something percent of the NATO alliance? Yeah, we could tell them anything we want. we'll just pull that money away and let them, hey, you know what, you're right, we shouldn't do this, we'll just pull out of the NATO alliance, you know, and people get all bent out of shape. But he's making these entities shake away the this is how we've always done it mentality, and instead take on some new, you know, the modern problem requires modern solution type thinking. So you go after Mexico, hey, look, I'm sick and tired of all these people coming. They're not Mexicans. They're coming from outside your country. You're letting them through. We're going to do something about it. How about 5% on tariffs every week added on until you guys catch some kind of epiphany about it? And next thing you know, he didn't even put the first 5%. Mexicans are working on it. He did the same thing to NATO. You know what? You guys need to hit your 2%. Which is what we've all agreed on, because we're paying for all your defense. You're not paying anything. It makes you look bad. You know, you're not our children. We're not going to give you an allowance. Let's go ahead and make this happen. And yeah, they were embarrassed, but they came around and they did it because somebody actually held them accountable. That's what he's doing. And I think
I think the media would have been happy that the president. I know people are against tariffs, and I understand that, but the threat really worked. So within, 7 days, they were in negotiations for a few days. you know, intense negotiations for a few days, and then they came out with the solution, you know, that Mexico was going to contribute in helping us, helping, you know, steer these illegal immigrants, particularly the ones, you know, from Honduras,
right,
south of Mexico, things like that. Okay, great. This is absolutely fabulous. It's absolutely 100% fantastic news. And the media says, oh, he created the crisis. This was already worked. This was already in place, and now he's just taking credit. Like, how did he even get away with saying something like that? I think it was absolutely spectacular what went on.
What's funny about that is they actually kind of touch on the truth, which is that there's nothing instant in the U.S. government. These things take a long time. So when I hear that, hey, this agreement between Mexico and the U.S. was really started months ago, yeah, I believe that, because that's what it takes. You're not on the phone every day with Mexico. You're on the phone maybe once a month with Mexico.
Right.
So these things do take a while. And so you have the media in an accidental truth-telling phase where they're like, well, you know, it's not as instantaneous as it makes it sound. They kind of really were working on it. Yeah, no, you're right. I wish you would report everything else like that, because that's the reality. The reality is when something happens, unless it's a catastrophe, when something happens in the government, that thing has been planned out for a while, and they're just negotiating it. That's just the way it is. It's a slow-moving machine. The president said, hey, Brennan's clearance is going to be revoked. He still has it, to
yeah,
our
chagrin.
What's
up with that? Well, how come – so who's not following orders?
The SES, the Senior Executive Service, the people who are in charge of whatever that level is that deals with the clearances, someone's dragging their feet, or someone's, you know, some people are dragging their feet on that. He gives the order.
Another question for you.
Sure.
With everything that has gone down in the Department of Justice, you know, with under, you know, the spying under with Trump. People do are worried that, and they do want to have faith in the law enforcement agencies at the federal level. Obviously, we want to have faith in those agencies that they're following the law themselves. You know, nobody's above the law. That they're following the laws also. Like,
right.
Does Trump want to go out and fire people? You know, should he clean house? What
he
should
go
on? How should Trump handle dealing with the problem that? The Democrats are, I mean, that, you know, things went on in there that we're not completely sure about, and heads are going to roll criminally. But what about that, you know, the whole, the meat of the department? Do people get fired?
Okay, so, and I was kind of talking about that in the beginning of this hour. The first thing Trump did once he realized that he was being spied on is that he realized, I have to get rid of the law enforcement apparatus that's currently in place, because clearly they're working against me. He has done that already. 27 different people at the high end. These are all appointees. So we're not talking about rank and file guys. Rank and file guys are rank and file guys. They do their job. We're talking about at the administrative level, 27 different people have been removed, demoted, fired, have been forced to resign. Some of them have criminal charges pending against them, like McCabe and Comey. He's already done that. And removing
okay,
that
good. I didn't know
trash,
that. I didn't know
oh, yeah,
that.
Well,
okay, I'm glad to hear it.
Well, and it comes to fruition with Barr. Barr becomes the centerpiece now. After he cleared out all the crap, the last person that needed to be removed was Rosenstein. And Rosenstein was attached to the hip to Barr, and they did a pretty genius thing too. He said he was going to resign, and then they told him, "No, you're not. You're going to hang on for a little bit." And he's like, "All right, cool."
Yeah.
You know,
what was that about? Why did he want him to hold on? Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I want to hear what you think.
I'm curious whether it was to lead into appointing Barr.
No. So Barr was coming in regardless. That's he got through the Senate, no problem, because he went through the first time, no problem. Rosenstein is a conflicted man. he signed the fourth FISA warrant. We know that for a fact, and that's going to be a big problem for him, but we'll get to that another show, I guess. He also signed the memos suggesting that Comey be fired for cause. So that's kind of a tricky thing. Then he writes the memo for Mueller that says basically search out whatever you want and do what you got to do. And then people believe that Rosenstein was in with Mueller on trying to get Trump. So here he is now. Now that Barr is in, I'm going to resign because Barr's got it. Let me get out of here as fast as possible. Because once they resign, they're kind of outside the purview for administrative punishments. They hold him up. They make him, and Barr makes him sign with him, the four-page memo basically saying no obstruction, no collusion, no corruption. And it makes Rosenstein basically take back his words from the previous thing that he did. So now they've neutralized Rosenstein. Then they let him resign. Because if he comes out later on, like how Comey is and Brennan is, to say, oh, I said this about that. Well, yeah, well, you basically retracted it when you signed the AG memo. And it was a brilliant stroke to neutralize the last guy they had to get rid of, which was Rosenstein. So now
okay,
Barr's
good.
On his own path.
I feel like
yeah.
happy to hear that. I really like
fun.
Barr. Yeah, I'm glad to have mm-hmm. him there.
He sounds like
okay.
us. He sounds like he comes from the Northeast. I don't know where he's from.
I think that's what I thought too. I think so. I don't know whether he's from D.C. or not. I'm not really sure, but yeah, he sounds like
I'll
from
look,
the Northeast. Yeah, the next time. Okay, I want we are going to close to the end of the show. But I wanted to know. I wanted your prediction. 2020 Trump wins. 2020 Trump
yes.
wins. What does the media do?
With respect to what? The fact that he's won?
How do they react?
I think, well, two ways. I think they the ones who aren't being directly attacked by Trump lose their minds, and the ones that are being directly attacked by Trump are too busy on defense. I think he's going to go after them, and not in a way that threatens our First Amendment rights. He's going to have to after individuals for specific violations according to laws we already have, and they're going to be in deep trouble. I think that you're going to see that once he wins 2020, there's going to be a dramatic reshifting of how news is done. The 24-hour cycle really didn't do many favors because they always had to have something, so they always went out and found something. I don't think it really did them any favors. Now I think we're going to start seeing people kind of retracting from them. They're going to have to be resculpted in some form or fashion. I don't know. I don't know how it would be. One thing that I've noticed is that we are the news now. People are becoming more curious. They are cross-referencing not just articles, but cross-referencing with people. So I'll give you quick – I know we're running up on time, but this. Remember the limousine that crashed and killed like 18 people up here in New York?
I do remember that.
Okay. In the channels that
I – New York. Mm-hmm.
Yep, upstate New York.
It was in
so,
a town. Yeah, I own property up there. Mm-hmm.
You are exactly. It's four exits for me. So the people
gotcha.
That I kind of talked to, they were all into conspiracy theory things. Who was in that limo? Did somebody take him out? And then someone like me, I was here. I was like, hey, guys, it's just a limo crash. You know, it's a family. You know, they lost a lot of members at one time. There's nobody specific in
right.
there. And you kind of set that aside. So people are like, oh, okay, well, we got somebody kind of on the scene. To kind of let us know what's going on. And I think people are cross-referencing a whole lot more and becoming more comfortable determining their truths, determining the truth, figuring out what sounds right and doesn't sound right. And I do it too. And it's really amazing and kind of gets people talking in a way that is conducive.
I like it. I think we are really in exciting times. I think our economy, our GDP is up. Unemployment, you know, as I said earlier, record lows. A lot of things good. Companies coming back to America. We love
yeah.
Made in America. We want Made in America. I think it's awesome. And I think this is probably part of the reason why jobs are opening up. And I feel Obama used to tout about jobs. A lot of these jobs were federal, were working for the government, which is taxpayer-funded. You know, that's not building your economy. That's not building GDP. Creating jobs in the free, in the open market, that's what we want. We want jobs in the open market, and that contributes to the government, helps them float because we pay taxes. So, you know, I'm very excited about the future. I'm so glad that you're able to come on. We really are. It's going to shut off in about a couple of minutes. Could you do me a favor and let my audience know where they can find you or follow you on Twitter or Facebook?
On Facebook and Twitter. On Facebook, I run By the People. So you can, let's see if we can pull that up real quick. And you just look up By the People, and you'll see Abraham Lincoln wearing a MAGA cap and sunglasses. And the Twitter account is at ByThePeople1776. I'm more on Facebook than I am on Twitter.
Okay, perfect. Well, be in touch. You'll have to come back and give me an update on what's happening from your perspective.
Can do.
Okay,
absolutely.
God bless you. Have a great
you
weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night.